one verse in verse 21, a verse that we have previously read. And I will tell you that I heard a fellow one time classify preachers into two groups. He said, they are either lumpers or stretchers. He said, a lumper is a preacher who will lump a bunch of different points into one lesson. And a stretcher is a preacher who will stretch one short text out to a full lesson. I don't know exactly how this will fit into that classification. I'll leave that to you to judge. But I do want to talk to you this morning for a few moments about a man. A man whom you may have never really encountered before. Or perhaps you have encountered in your reading of the Scriptures this verse in Mark 15 and verse 21. Well, we have the mentioning of a man named Simon. And the text says that they, meaning the Roman soldiers, as they were progressing along the streets of Jerusalem, taking Jesus with his cross to the place of crucifixion, and when Jesus had collapsed under the weight of the cross, then they, the soldiers, pressed into service a passerby coming from the country, Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. I want to talk to you this morning about Simon of Cyrene. This is, as has previously been noted, a time of the year when many people's thoughts go to, in the course of this weekend, the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus. And here is one person who played a part in that, this man Simon. Now, we know nothing more about Simon than what we read in this one verse. But I would say to you that there is enough in this verse to prompt our thoughts about this man, and I hope draw some lessons that could rightly be derived from what this little verse says. But let me begin by saying that we should be careful that we don't equate prominence among people with pleasure from God. That is, just because a person is prominent doesn't mean that they necessarily have God's favor. And the opposite of that is true, and that is, because a person is not prominent doesn't mean that they're really not in favor with God. There are a lot of people that we know virtually nothing about in the Scriptures that are mentioned just in a verse here or a verse there. Some who remain completely nameless. The Hebrew letter in the 11th chapter contains the names of many prominent men and women from the Old Testament who are heralded in that chapter as examples of faith. Great stories that we're familiar with about Noah or Abraham or Sarah and many, many others. In fact, the writer says, I just don't have the time to tell of all of these. I can't tell you any more about Barak or about Samson or about Jephthah. And he goes on with still a list more that he doesn't have time to talk about. But then he says an interesting thing. And others. And he relates how these others who remain totally unnamed suffered great indignities and great hardships. And he comes to the point, one of the great statements in the Bible, he says, of whom the world was not worthy. But you know, you don't know a single one of the names of those people. Now here's a good thing. It's because you and I are nobodies too. I mean, you go outside of this building and you walk down the street and you won't find a single person who will be able to tell you who David Owen is. I suspect there are people in this room that couldn't tell you. And that's okay. That's fine. You may be visiting with us. I may not have had the opportunity to meet you yet. And it's understandable that you don't have the foggiest idea of who David Owen is. It's okay. We don't know who those people, those others, were in Hebrews, the 11th chapter. And we know very little about who Simon of Cyrene was. But I want to tell you that one thing we do know about Simon is that he was of Cyrene. Now, Cyrene is a city in North Africa. It is usually identified as being modern-day Tripoli in the modern nation of Libya. History records that there was a large Jewish population in Cyrene. Simon could have been a Jew who had moved to Cyrene and lived there outside of Palestine in what the Bible refers to and historians refer to as the diaspora, which is just a word that means the dispersion, dispersed ones. That is, those who were Jews who didn't live in Israel proper, but they lived outside of Israel in the lands of the Gentiles. And it may be that that this man Simon was one who lived there, moved, or his family prior to his birth moved to Cyrene and made that their home. The Bible also tells us something more that we know about him here in verse 21, is that he was coming from the country. When he came upon this scene where he was pressed into service, he was coming from the country. Now, possibly, he lived in Jerusalem at this time. That is, his family had moved to Cyrene. He had been perhaps born there and raised there, but now was living in Jerusalem, having moved back into the and he was now coming back into the city, perhaps from work. But I must tell you that that is probably not a likely possibility, in my estimation anyway. I think it's probably unlikely that at this time, at the Passover, that this man would have been coming in back into his home from working at this particular point in time. But possibly he had come, and I think more likely, had come to Jerusalem for the observance of the Passover, having left his home in Cyrene and traveled there to Jerusalem, like so many others did at this period of time. The city's population would have swelled greatly. The streets would have been more crowded than they would normally. One commentator would describe the streets at this time probably as being claustrophobic. The numbers of people that had come into the city were so great. And I think it's probably more likely that that was the case for Simon, that he had come from his home in Cyrene in North Africa. This man was possibly a Jew, ethnically, I mean. He was certainly a Jew religiously, but possibly a Jew ethnically. That is, his parents or his forebears had left from Israel, moved to Cyrene, and there he grew up. But being born of Jewish parents. Or it's possible that he was ethnically an African, and that he had converted to Judaism, that he was what is often referred to as a proselyte, that is, someone who had been converted to the religion of the Jews. But whatever the case, this man's trip to Jerusalem at the Passover was a trip undertaken because of his religious faith, and he was there to observe the Passover. And it was an event that probably he never expected to happen. Can you not imagine this man traveling into Jerusalem, into the streets of Jerusalem, making his way through the crowds, now coming upon this scene? What does he see? Well, what he saw was another man of about 30 years of age, a man whose physical build perhaps indicated a profession of exertion, the profession of a carpenter. But a man whose physical condition was one that was indeed dire. It bore the marks of torture. The Bible tells us in Mark the 14th chapter that what Simon would have seen was a wounded man. Mark chapter 14 tells us how the high priest's henchmen had abused Jesus, how they beat him, how they slapped him. Then in Mark chapter 15, we read of how Jesus was scourged upon the orders of Pilate. And if you've ever read or heard any descriptions about the process of scourging, you know what a brutal experience it was. Roman soldiers, adept at this task of scourging, would take whips of leather tongs. Tied on the end of the tongs would be pieces of bone or metal or glass. And then with the whips and the flick, the expert flick of the wrist, those metal, hard, sharp pieces would be ripped across the back of the person being scourged, and pieces of skin would be pulled off. It was exactly what it was intended to be, torturous and brutal. What Simon saw when he came upon this scene was a man who was a wounded man, but he also saw a forsaken man, a deserted man, a man who was all alone in his task of making his way through the streets. Simon would not have known of the 12 followers that this man, Jesus, had, who had at this point in time left him, who had deserted him. Simon of Cyrene would not have known about another man who bore the same name, Simon, one of those 12 disciples, who when he was pressed as to whether or not he was associated with this man, Jesus, before his trials actually began, cursed and swore that he didn't know this man, Jesus. That was Simon Peter. Simon would not have known about the cries that had been called out there in the city in the hours prior to this of crucify him, crucify him. Give us the criminal Barabbas. Give us him and crucify this Jesus. Simon would not have known about those cries and how they all came together to demonstrate that this was not only a wounded man, but this was a deserted man, a forsaken man. And then when Simon saw this scene, as he came upon it, he would have seen Jesus as a cursed man. His familiarity with the law of Moses would have led him to conclude that this man was a cursed man because he was at this very moment, on his way to be crucified, to be hung upon a tree, as it were, to be hung upon a cross, and to be hung, according to the law of Moses, was the fate of a cursed, a condemned man. Cursed is everyone who hangs upon a tree, the law of Moses had said. And so Simon, coming on this scene, would have seen this man wounded, forsaken, and cursed. He probably had no esteem and no regard for this man when he came upon this scene. You know, normally the Romans made a condemned man, such as Jesus, carry his own instrument of execution to the place where he would be put to death. It was a form of humiliation, and I hope I do not sound flippant in making this comparison, but I think I understand the psychology of what the Romans did in all of this. Have you ever been told by your mother to go out and get the switch that she's going to use on you? Why does she do that? Is it because she's lazy? I doubt that. No, she did it to imprint upon you even more the significance of the punishment that you are about to receive. That's exactly what the Romans were doing when they made the condemned carry their own cross to the place where they would be hung upon that cross. Bear the shame and the disgrace of your punishment was their thought. Now this man that Simon comes upon when he encounters this scene is staggering under the weight of his cross. I've seen various estimations given of what a cross might have weighed. More than likely, it was the cross piece that he was carrying. But whatever it weighed, its weight would have been magnified by the fact that Jesus had been so brutally tortured and now physically was just incapable of carrying what he likely could have easily carried physically on any other day. And so he collapses under the weight. And Simon, who has stumbled upon this scene, now is seized, Luke says in his record of these events. Mark says he was compelled by the Romans. Simon is taken not as a noble volunteer, but rather as one who is impressed or who is pressed into service. And he is made now to carry this cross. The hero in this story is not Simon. Can you imagine what he might have been thinking? I would think that one thought that might have come through his mind, if he is anything like David is that this isn't fair. This isn't right. Why must I bear the shame and the indignity that is rightly this man's? Why must I now bear it? I can imagine that Simon might have thought about blood that was perhaps upon that piece of wood. Blood that came from the back of Jesus as a result of the scourging that he had endured. Or the sweat that was upon that piece of wood. I can imagine Simon thinking, I don't want to touch this. I don't want to carry this. What will it do to my clothes? Or as a Jew, what will it do to me? Defiling me, the touching of the blood that was possibly upon it. A third thing that he might have thought was, what will people think as we walk through the streets and make our way to where I have to carry this? Will the people around throughout these crowded streets think that I am the condemned man? What will this mean that people will think about me? Because now I'm associated with this man. Now the heroism in this scene is not depicted in Simon. The hero in this scene is Jesus, who bears this cross and upon which he will be crucified so that you and I and anyone who would come to him might be saved. But now, as we look at this scene, inevitably I think we come to the question of how would Simon have responded to all of this? As he carries the cross all the way now to the place of crucifixion and he lays it down and he steps out of the scene, where does he go? What happens to Simon of Cyrene? I have told you before that as we read and study the Bible, there are some things that we can be dogmatic about. Or rather, there are some things we cannot be dogmatic about. There are some things we can be bulldogmatic about. Here are some things I want to say to you now that I cannot be dogmatic about. But I want you to think with me about what may have happened for this man and to this man, Simon, after he has departed from this scene. Did you notice a rather curious statement in the 21st verse as we read it there in Mark chapter 15? They pressed into service a passerby coming from the country, Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus. What does it matter who his sons are? I mean, that's put into the story for a reason. Why? Why is it mentioned who these two sons are? Well, I suspect it is mentioned because the people who first received this account of Mark's gospel must have known these two. Well, what does that suggest to us? If Mark writes his gospel for the reading of believers, for the encouragement of those who are Christians, so that they might know the facts about the life of their Lord, if he is writing to Christians and he mentions this in passing, that here's something about Simon, who is the father of Alexander and Rufus, they must have known who Alexander and Rufus were. Well, might that suggest that Alexander and Rufus had become believers themselves? Add to that what we read in the book of Romans. In Romans chapter 16, we find in the opening verses of that chapter a list of some of the workers in the church in the city at Rome. And again, here's a list of names, people of whom we know nothing more about than what is said in these verses. But I want you to notice that in verse 13 there, Paul, as he writes to the Romans, says, "Greet Rufus, a choice man in the Lord, also his mother and mine." Now, there's no family connection between Paul the Apostle and Simon of Cyrene or Alexander or Rufus. But he does say in this writing to greet this man Rufus, and he says also his mother and mine. Now, is Paul saying he's the brother of Rufus? That is a possibility. And that it's possible that this is an entirely different Rufus. But it is also possible that what Paul is saying is not that this is my physical mother, the woman who gave me birth, but rather she has been like a mother to me. Have you not known, those of you that have been members of the Lord's church for maybe many years, can you not look back on your past, maybe decades in which you have been members of local congregations of God's people, and there have been some godly women in those congregations who've just taken you under their wing, and they've been like a mother to you. Perhaps you were far away from your parents, moved far away. Perhaps your parents were dead. But this good woman just took you in and became like your mother. Well, that very possibly is what Paul is referring to here. I simply want to suggest to you that it is entirely possible that the Rufus that Mark mentions in Mark chapter 15, that is apparently known to believers when he writes the Gospel of Mark, is Rufus that we read about in the book of Romans. By the way, many commentators believe that the original recipients of the Gospel of Mark were the believers in the city of Rome. But the point is made simply on the basis of Mark 15 and verse 21. Believers knew who Rufus and Alexander were, and these were two sons of Simon of Cyrene. Now, what this suggests is then the events that Simon of Cyrene saw on that day in that city street in Jerusalem had a great impact upon him. I know that it had an impact upon people of his city. Whether or not Simon was among them, I cannot say. But when I read in Acts, the second chapter, the record of events that happened just 50 days after the Passover, events that happened on what is called the day of Pentecost, and Pentecost just means 50. So 50 days after the Passover, about 50 days after these events happened in the life of Simon of Cyrene, on this day of Pentecost, the Apostle Peter and the other apostles began to preach in the city of Jerusalem about the resurrection of Jesus. But I want you to notice that there is described in several verses from verse 8 and following of Acts chapter 2, there is described the locations from which many Jews had come into Jerusalem. So that on that day of Pentecost, there were people from these locations gathered together, hearing the preaching of the gospel for the first time. And in verse 10, we're told that some of them came from Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the districts of Libya around Cyrene. These were Jews and proselytes, verse 10 tells us. So I know that men and women from Cyrene heard the gospel on that day of Pentecost. And it's very possible that this man Simon was among them. When we continue further in Acts, the 11th chapter, we see once again a reference made to people from this town. Acts, the 11th chapter, and verse 19 says that those who were scattered because of the persecution that occurred in connection with Stephen made their way to Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, speaking the word to no one except Jews alone. But there were some of them, men of Cyprus and Cyrene, who came to Antioch and began speaking to the Greeks also, preaching the Lord Jesus. And so we see a great evangelistic effort being put forth in this city, Antioch. And right in the center of it were people who came from Cyrene. Was this man Simon among them? Possibly so. I don't believe we can really make a strong case for it. But it is a possibility. Now, I say that in order to say this. Whatever part Simon played in the events on that day, carrying the cross of Jesus as he did, assume, if you will, that it affected him so greatly that he himself became a disciple of the Lord. What I want to say to you is this. The heaviest thing that Simon of Cyrene carried on that day was not the cross of Jesus. May I tell you what was a heavier burden? Mark the 8th chapter and verse 34. We find where Jesus in his teaching says this to a multitude of people that included his own disciples. Verse 34 says, he summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. You know what the heaviest thing Simon of Cyrene would have carried? It would have been his own cross. Because what Jesus tells us is that if anyone wants to become a follower of His, they're going to have to do this. They're going to have to take up their own cross and follow Him. And here's the lesson that we can learn from this man who bore the cross of Jesus, if indeed it is true that he himself became a disciple as well. It is that we must bear our cross daily, Jesus said. Daily, take up your cross and follow me. Are you willing to do that? You won't ever have the occasion, like Simon did, to be standing by chance in a Jerusalem street and taken by Roman soldiers and made to carry the cross of Jesus. But what Jesus called upon you to do is not to do that, but rather to bear your own cross. What is your cross? It's your responsibility. It's your obligation. You have it. You have one. I have one. And it either lies on the ground, left and ignored, or it's picked up on a daily basis and it is borne, it is carried. Have you picked up that responsibility that you have before God? This day, when so much focus is upon the cross of Jesus and His subsequent resurrection from the death that He died on that cross, shall we not focus our attention upon that cross that is ours and question whether or not we are carrying it? In spite of what others may think, I'll bear my responsibility to God. No matter what they may say, no matter how they might criticize, I'll bear it because it's mine. And it's the only way that I can be His follower. Would you come after Jesus today? Let me tell you how to do it. Pick up your cross and follow Him. And He's told how to follow Him and how to begin following. He told men and women that they must believe that He is God's Son. And believing Him to be the Son of God, they must turn away from their sins. Repent of them. Confessing their faith in Him, they must be baptized that they might be saved. And then upon their baptism, they are to walk daily in obedience to Him. That's your cross. Will you pick it up today? We pray you will. Encourage you to as we stand and sing together.